And therefore, we're back.
I'm back. Yay. I'm back. Yes. Again, sorry. Sorry for the holiday, because it meant there was there was no pod last week. But back, refreshed. We went about as far away as we probably could go. You know when you have to go far away just for it to be really a holiday? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you flew, I don't know, 2 hours or you stayed for us in Europe, it would still feel too close to home.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Do you know what I mean? So you've got to like get away. So we went far away where we're talking palm trees, beaches, tropical. So no thoughts of work, no thoughts of, so you could all really switch off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And.
Oh, that's nice.
It was, boys had a great time. They kept making friends. Every day there was like a different friend. And they were shooting. When we got there, we found out they were going to shoot for 3 days or 4 days a Bollywood film at the hotel.
Oh, okay, nice.
And I've never seen a Bollywood film. I've seen bits and pieces, but I've never seen one. It was the most incredible thing to watch film. But I felt really sorry because apparently the leading actor and actress were super famous in India and Bollywood. I didn't know who they were. Super famous. And there was this one scene, and we're sort of lying by the pool on the beach watching them film. They put this cube, it wasn't a glass cube, but it was like a reflecting cube, massive cube, box thing, in the sea, right? Then they got their lead man and woman to stand on it. It's about 30 degrees. And she looked fabulous, but she was dressed in, I can only describe it as bako foil.
Oh.
Imagine, she's got sort of 6-inch heels. She's literally wrapped in bako foil, standing on a reflecting box in the sea, in 30 degree heat. I mean,
wow.
I mean,
well, the good news is she's going to earn a lot of money. So,
I mean,
there you go.
I know we talk about suffering for our art, but that and I think the fella with her didn't. I think he kept messing up. So we're talking 15 takes in bako foil on the box in the sun. But it was that was amazing just to see them. Apparently, it's a film that's going to be released in November. And this was a 4-minute song within the film. But just to see how they went about it was amazing. So that was fun. So yeah, it was good. It was restful. I did get a couple of messages from various broadcasters about doing tennis bits, you know, when tennis news broke. But I was very good at saying, no, I can't, you know, I'm away with the family. So it was a total switch off. Which in a way is bad.
Yeah, but you saw the tennis news coming through, didn't you?
I mean, you can't stop tennis news
That's
coming through.
That's not a total switch off.
You can never get away. I have to admit, every day I'd look at my, I wouldn't take my phone out with me, but I'd look at it once a day. And then when we got talking to people, the new kind of the work I did, they'd walk up to me and they'd just ask me about tennis stuff or some football stuff. So, but it wasn't, I wasn't working, but I was keeping an eye on things. But it was I think we were ready to come back. There's only so much you can eat and drink in the space of a couple of weeks before you realize you've got to get back to it. But it was amazing. And so while I've been far far away, you have been moving away. You've moved. Congratulations.
Yeah, I wouldn't say away. I've actually moved closer to you, so that's I mean, not that much closer.
Well,
but a bit
I was
closer.
Gonna say, it's not that much closer, to be fair.
No, I know. I'm edging. I'm in your direction. Yes, no, I've moved house. What an intense experience. Everything went perfectly smoothly, except we had our dining room chairs stolen. But
stolen?
You know, we sort of thought, yeah. But
from
we
where?
Thought, you know, well.
How?
There like, was
how?
About an hour. There was an hour period where they were in the front garden of our old place where they were unattended and... in that hour period they were taken, so that was a bit unfortunate, but you know what, if that was the worst thing that happened, not a big deal.
Well, I'm glad you've moved away from that place if they're going to be stealing your dining room furniture. I can't believe that. Oh wow.
Yeah, I know, I couldn't believe it. Maybe they thought it was sort of, you know, when people leave it out and say, oh, this is free, take it. But we thought, oh, we're only going to be an hour, and we thought it wasn't long enough, but there you go. So anyway, yeah, but no, all moved in. I'm surrounded by boxes, a million and one things to do before Madrid starts on Monday. but otherwise, all good. Exciting times.
But the thing is, where do you want to start with the tennis news? Because It's piled up. And again, we're not a news service, but there are so many things to address, to talk about. We're pick a subject, pick a topic, pick a person, pick a whatever. Where do you want to go first?
Well, yeah, it's been busy, hasn't it? I'm sort of glad we didn't do pods for the last couple of weeks, because we would have been, some of the times I just didn't even know. I didn't even know what I thought, what I would say, any of it. I suppose we have to start with the biggest news. It is still news that there are no Russians and Belarusians competing in Wimbledon and the British grass court tournaments. How about starting there? Seems like a significant decision.
it's huge, isn't it? And I think as we speak, because there has been a press conference recently at the All England Club, they are yet to make a decision whether support staff who are Russian and Belarusian will be allowed at the championships. As things stand at the moment, it is the... Now, we've seen through this year that there have been decisions made on teams. So Russian team, the Belarusian team cannot compete X, Y, and Z. But this is the first time it's been targeted is the wrong word. That it's been about individuals. It's been about individuals who cannot compete. So what was your first thought when this news came out that it would be the individuals representing Russia and the Belarusians who couldn't compete?
Well, I was sort of eased into it because I'd heard conversations. I knew how seriously the LTA and the All England Club were taking it. There's been a call from our government to essentially do just that and end business with Russia and not promote the Russian state in any way. And obviously it's a British tournament, a British organisation in the LTA. So, yeah, it had been rumbling along with the conversations, and the real problem was that there was such big resistance from the ATP and WTA, of course, and that is definitely, I think, the main concern. Because it's one thing if you think of if it was a different sport, it was one thing if there was a governing body that sort of runs the sport and they made a decision, or even if it was the Olympics and the IOC makes a decision. The difficulty with having so many different governing bodies doing different things and wanting different things is where that's my main concern, really, is how it's going to play out sort of internally within tennis. And as we speak, ATP and WTA haven't made any sort of decisions or moved anything forward. They've just said that they're looking at their options, I believe. And I suppose they want to sort of defend their players, but it's not really, it's not about defending them. It's, Wimbledon haven't attacked those players. It's just a very horrible situation, really.
Some will say it's a brave decision by Wimbledon. Some will say it's a sensible decision by Wimbledon. Some will say it's a right decision by Wimbledon. I think, though, it's the repercussions. Just looking at a basic one of individual contractors, the day-to-day business is... It's winning points, it's winning prize money. You have to keep winning the points, you have to keep up the pressure. There are 2,000 points for the person who wins Wimbledon. And I heard it mooted that would they take away points? Therefore, would Wimbledon just become a big exhibition? Because how unfair is that when you're giving everyone else the opportunity to earn all these points, and the Russians and Belarusians, through no fault of their own, don't have that opportunity? Not necessarily.
Yeah, but they can't do that. You can't punish everyone. As a response, I can't see how they would end up at that decision.
Just make it a level playing field for the others? Because you're not taking away the money, but the points, so you'll still be earning. But isn't it just fair if you take away all the points, then everyone's in the same boat, rather than leaving a group of people who... This is when it becomes difficult, doesn't it? There's all these little things that, and I think it's easier when... If you go to ban a country, it's easier because a lot of the time you have countries investing in federations. So the Russian Tennis Federation will have a lot of help from the Russian government, etc., etc. And I'm not saying that individual players throughout the world aren't backed, supported by their government at some level, but it's harder in this situation. And one thing I picked up from the Wimbledon press conference was they said they were guided by government guidelines in the UK, which put them in sort of one or two boxes. It was to get the individuals to come out and condemn the war in Ukraine, or you ban them as a whole. And if I was left with those two options, if they were my only two options, I would lean towards banning them. Because on the other hand, you're saying to someone who's, say, a Russian, you're saying, get them to stand there and say, this is wrong. Look, we all believe this is wrong. But someone who comes from Russia, does that, I don't know, does that endanger family members who are in Russia? Does it endanger them? What if they were to come out and say they are in support of the war? Because there will be people out there who are in support of it. How does that, I don't see any good coming out of making individuals stand up and say for or against, because it's easy for you and I to say we're against us and it's a terrible thing. There'll be no repercussions for us or our family. But to make people from the Belarusians and the Russians come out with a statement like that, would, it could be dangerous in some respects. So if they were looking at the guidelines and they were the two options, I see why they landed on the side of banning them completely. But then at the same time, tennis is about individual contractors, and these guys and girls are making their living, and they are stopping them able to do that. It's difficult, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think look, there's no way they could have asked them to declare anything.
No.
And I know that possibly some of the Russians, you know, Rublev was saying that they would have signed something or done something or donated money, but you just can't put them in that position.
No.
I'm afraid. And it's just absolutely not possible. I don't think that would have been a consideration at all. The thing is that I understand that people think that it's not fair. And I think that it's not fair for the Russians to play. But it's not about... Wimbledon haven't made this decision to be fair. They're not doing it to try and level the playing field. They're doing it because they believe that it's right. They're doing it because they've been told to by their government. And they're doing it because they recognise that they actually they are a huge tournament, a huge organisation, a huge sporting event across all sports, and they actually have a bit of a platform in that sense. And do they want that platform to be used for Russian players to be lifting trophies and whatever else that might mean? So that's where it's difficult, because the WTA and ATP is saying, well, it's not fair. And and I think Wimbledon are probably saying, well, yeah, we know, but this is the decision that had to be made. And also, it's not just Wimbledon, it's the LTA as well. So that's the British grass court events, Queens, Edgbaston, Eastbourne, Nottingham as well. And that's where it sort of falls down, is, you know, Djokovic's statements. And again, I can totally understand that people are angry that it's not fair, but sometimes things aren't fair when it comes to these decisions. I believe that Shahar Peer, being an Israeli player, couldn't get a visa to play in a tournament, so then she couldn't play in the tournament. No one's saying, oh, well, what about the points that she wasn't able to get? And also, that sort of thing happens quite often on the quiet, where visas can get delayed and you can't get to tournaments. Yeah, it's not fair. They didn't get the chance to play that tournament, but it's... You know, you're not going to sort of stop things. I know it's different that it's been banned, but it's that's the issue, really, is that one side want it to be completely fair, regardless of what's going on in the world. And the other side says, well, look, we would love for it to be fair, but the things going on in the world are more important. So where does that leave the sport moving forward? I've just got no idea.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's punishing individuals who've done no wrong. And you mentioned the likes of Andrei Rublev, and a number of Russians and Belarusians have come out and said, look, we are against this. This is horrifying. This is nothing to do with us. We just want to play tennis. And so, in effect, you're punishing these individuals. On the other hand, people talk about sending a message, and that has to be a blanket message, and you cannot have exceptions. Wimbledon talked about they don't want to fuel the Russian propaganda machine. I mean, look, I don't see it. I don't see a Russian winning Wimbledon this year on the men's side anyway, but were Medvedev to go and lift the title, how that would be a positive for Russia, how that would do you see what I mean? How that would actually work in their favour of what they're trying to do. But But at the same time, you have to take action because what they're doing is wrong. And unfortunately for them, they come under the umbrella, the Russians and the Belarusians, and action has to be taken. But it's difficult.
I'm not a political expert at all, but like
no, nor am I.
but I'll give it a punch.
Is this coming across in this podcast?
This is easy, isn't it? But yeah, I just think that, you know, when they talk about the propaganda, there's obviously the propaganda of the players doing well when they're winning, but there's just the general propaganda and censorship that is happening out there in terms of, you know, the Russians, just a lot of Russian citizens just not knowing what is going on and just not understanding. Now, if Wimbledon did what Andrei Rublev suggested and just donated the money and gave £1 million or whatever it was to Ukraine and to help, he was saying, well, that would help more. But, you know, that would not get reported in Russia and they would have no idea that would happen. However, you can't not report on Daniil Medvedev being like not allowed to play at Wimbledon, and Sabalenka and Pavlyuchenkova and all of these players that you, yes, of course they're going to spin it. Of course they're going to use propaganda, but it 100% will cut through, and it will potentially cause some questions to be raised within the Russian people. Whether they're shut down, who knows? In terms of, as I say, with the propaganda, you know, the machine will just sort of wind up again and they will spin it as best they can. But it just increases the pressure of all of these things that they're having to try and bat away. And it will definitely penetrate by the fact that there will be huge amounts of Russian tennis fans in Russia that love watching Wimbledon, love watching all of those players and the Belarusians as well. You know, they are huge tennis nations. I mean, you know, they're the defending champions, although they're not going to be able to defend in Billie Jean King Cup and Davis Cup. Yeah. You know, Medvedev was just world number one a matter of weeks ago. So there's so many fans there that are going to go, well, they're not in Wimbledon. And they're going to ask the questions why. And sure, the answers aren't going to be truthful, but at least those questions will be asked. Whereas, I suppose that's the argument from Wimbledon in terms of fighting the propaganda, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard not to see it as the individuals being punished, but then you look at the bigger picture, and if Wimbledon were looking at the two options of getting them to stand up and say I'm for or against it, or banning them as a whole, maybe this is the kinder option, together with not wanting to give fuel to the Russian propaganda machine, etc., etc. You know, it's maybe this is the kinder option, but it's going to be interesting to see as Wimbledon and the grass gets closer how this winds up. You know, is it maybe not talked about at all? Is it just accepted as a fait accompli and this is what has happened? Do you see what I mean? I know, are the players, are they just, maybe they just have to accept it, right? Maybe they just have to, there won't be any comeback on this and we will just get on with it and they won't be at Wimbledon, then we'll move on. And then they'll be back for the US hard court season. I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see, do the US Open do something about this? Do they take a stance? Do other people take a stance? Or will it just be Wimbledon with this stance? It's going to be strange, whatever happens, not to see those familiar faces that we're used to seeing there. But as you say, we're not politicians. I think that might have come across in this podcast. But it's a huge talking point. I remember we talked about it's possibly something that could happen. And I think Wimbledon have done it in good time. And I think they've laid out their reasons very clearly for everyone. They're not hiding behind anything. They've just, and they've said that there's possibility for it to change. But you can't see that happening either, can you? Because there seems no end in sight to the atrocities that are happening right now in Ukraine for there to be a change of heart at Wimbledon. So we'll just have to accept that there'll be a number of players that we won't be seeing on the grass this year.
Yeah, and it's tough to accept. I think it's tough to accept even for the people who are very supportive of the decision. I think it's just, it's a terrible situation all around. And as I say, my main focus is, you know, I'm not really saying sort of my opinions on it. My main focus is, where does this leave tennis? Because at the moment, it's feeling quite fractured and it's feeling quite sort of attack and defend and that sort of thing. And that's what makes me very uncomfortable.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
One person who will be at Wimbledon, if he's fit, who can play Wimbledon, is Novak Djokovic. Because
it is indeed.
He's allowed in, and he's allowed in because, well, COVID regulations, well, at the UK, they're pretty much gone. Are they all gone? Are they all gone now where we are? I think so. I think everything's gone. Are they all gone? Sometimes, I think in certain situations, if you go to the doctors, I took my stepfather for his COVID booster. I think this is like number four, you have to wear masks. But largely, we've just come back from holiday. There was no passenger locator form. There was no test to be done. So it's pretty much people can come and go as they used to.
They can. And it means that Djokovic is going to have a full clay and a full grass court season. We'll see where it's at with the American hard courts after that. But yeah, it could have just been a one slam and a couple of Masters events that ultimately he had to miss. So he's just working his way back. I worked on Belgrade.
Oh, okay. So tell me what I was very, very happy that Rublev won. Very, very happy. But it was one of those at the end of that final. Very long speeches from Djokovic, but it's the Serbian Open. But positives for both. Positives for Rublev, he crossed that finish line. He beat the number one player in Djokovic, he got that trophy. And positives for Djokovic, that he got those hours back on court.
Yeah, and Djokovic won a lot of three-set matches from a set down, and he got a lot of time on court. I think it was really good for him because he played Monte Carlo. He lost in the first round to Davidovich-Fokina. Terrible draw, who obviously made the final. And then he went to Belgrade. Now, they're both sort of like home tournaments for him. He lives in Monte Carlo. Belgrade is Belgrade. And it's his hometown. So, you know, he was just absolutely adored. You could just see how methodically he was just slowly building his game. That's what was so fascinating. There was no panic. There was none of that. It was just every sort of 2 to 3 games, you just noticed that something was tightening up a bit. It was just, oh, that's getting a bit better there. That's not as loose as it was. And then it, you know, all those things. And he was just addressing things, problem solving through matches. As I say, responding really well. His problem was that he kept getting off to a slow start. So he went down a break all the time and then lost that set and then was able to pick it up. The way that he played in the quarterfinals in sets 2 and 3 against Kecmanovic was so good, and he really found an incredible level on return, and he did the same against Hashanov, returned incredibly well. In the final, he ran out of steam. He'd had a lot of three-set matches. He really tailed off in that final set. It was a brutal physical match, just as he did in Monte Carlo against Davidovich-Fokina, totally tailed off in the final set. But when I say tailed off, as in he just hit a wall, and you very rarely see that from Djokovic. So fitness is the only issue, to be honest. He said that he'd had an illness that really took it out of him, so he's still recovering from that. But twice in his two losses, he's basically fought incredibly hard physically to win the second set and then just hasn't had anything left in the third.
It's funny, when you were working on that final, I was watching football with the boys, actually, and we were messaging, and I was hoping that Rublev was going to do it, but I have such little faith because Rublev always seems to have such little faith in himself, especially when he comes up against that upper echelon of play. And we've seen it time and time and again, that is where he's faltered. And then you'll listen to interviews and Rublev's like, oh, I could get better, so many things I can improve on, oh, I'm not sure. And you're like, just believe in yourself. And I remember when the levelling up at one said all, and I immediately was like, oh, he's going to lose now. And I shouldn't have doubted you, firstly because you are the expert, and secondly because you are watching this match played out and you'd watched the tournament. But you were like, yeah, no, Djokovic is done now. And I was like, I still think he's going to beat Rublev. And you're like, no, he's done. And I was like, no, I think he's still. And then a time later, I was looking at the scores. I was like, wow, 6-love. He really was done. So can I apologise for doubting you? But it was just this little faith I've had in Rublev, because he's given me little faith in himself with all this negativity. So I apologise for doubting your expertise and the fact that you were actually watching the match.
Yeah. No, he was just completely toast. But Rublev was great, played really well. Huge improvements for him, his 11th title. It's all good stuff. It's now just got to come together in some big tournaments. So disappointing for him that he won't get a crack at the British grass courts and Wimbledon, of course. But, talking about going deep in Grand Slams, deep in Grand Slams, and deep in Masters events as well. I mean, he's made two finals. I'm just sort of remembering my stats from a week ago, but I think he's made two Masters finals. But that's where, he'll be knocking on the door, and I'm sure he'll get a major breakthrough soon enough.
Another big news, Emma Raducanu, who she's always in the news, has always been in the news since she won the US Open for very obvious reasons. And then it's been a sponsorship deal. It's been looking for a coach. It's been, sadly, for injury she's picked up along the way. And once again, it is looking for a coach because she has split with Torben Belts. Now, it's an interesting one when I talk this through with you because, the family, a little bit more about what's going on. I was, and you might say you weren't, even if you didn't know the family, but I was surprised at the timing and the split with Torben Belts. Were you surprised that relationship didn't last longer, especially with everything she said in the sort of the splitting statement when she said we had this chemistry, we had this relationship? Are you surprised it didn't last longer than it did?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't have any inside information, so I didn't know that it was coming. But I'm not surprised because if it's not working, they're just going to finish.
But did you think it wasn't? Did you think it wasn't working from what you'd seen? Because the statement is like was lovely, wasn't it? Great chemistry, had such fun. It's wonderful. But from what you'd seen on court, did you feel it wasn't working?
Yeah, I did. I didn't really see any significant improvements. Emma and her team are the sort of people that want results fast. She's an incredibly fast learner and can just sort of implement things as and when she needed to. I hadn't really seen many changes in the game. I mean, there's clearly some areas that she needs to focus on to help with her confidence. And it's just one of those situations. It's chicken and egg, isn't it? You're low on confidence, so things fall apart a little bit more technically. If you have any technical vulnerabilities, normally they're not there when you're feeling confident. The Zverev second serve is one we always go back to. And, his serve is monstrous when he's feeling good. And he just seems like he's completely unbreakable. And then as soon as he gets nerves, in it comes. And it's just, you sort of think, how is this guy in the top five? It's just unbelievable. So it can really dramatically swing. And so for Emma, so some of the technical vulnerabilities have come to the surface. She's low on confidence. How can you gain confidence if you've got technical issues? So you need to start somewhere. I think, I personally think for her it would be best to sort out the technique, the shots, the clarity of thought of what she's doing, and then go from there. But it's difficult. For sure, when I think she made a comment after Stuttgart saying, "Oh, quarterfinals of a tour event." If you told me that this time last year, that would have been like the best thing ever. So, yeah, it's such a bizarre situation, but it's equally as bizarre for the coach. I mean, how do you coach in that scenario? It's very difficult. I mean, she's a fantastic student to have, but everything else going on, it's not an easy prospect.
And let me ask you, because I think from the outside, the headline, Raducanu splits with another coach, looking for her fourth coach, I think, since July. So people from the outside who maybe don't know tennis or know it a little bit will think, well, hang on a second, is there something wrong with her? Is she not coachable? What's going wrong? Surely that's not normal. But from someone who has played the game, has been a 19-year-old looking for coaches, I mean, it's how tough is it to not only find that relationship that works, but then you add in her case, she's got the world watching, not just the tennis world. She's got, again, people that the lady in the chemist near me still asks about her every now and then, together with Djokovic. Whenever I go in to get sort of prescriptions for my parents, she's either asking about Emma Raducanu or Novak Djokovic. So how hard is it, or was it for you when you were younger and you're still growing? Okay, she's won a Grand Slam, but she's still growing. She's still learning. And now she's got the world's the world watching her every move. I mean, how tough is it when you're trying to build a relationship with who at first can be an absolute stranger, but you want to rely on that stranger to help you and progress you?
Well, I think the hard thing is that Emma's not one of those players who has had a long-term coach.
Yeah.
And we do see it a lot. I mean, you talked about the speeches in Belgrade. We had lots of Novak Djokovic's team, including Marion Vida, speaking at the presentation ceremony. And, you know, he worked with Vida, I think it's 15 years maybe he worked with him for. And then Ivanisevic overlapped and now he's taken charge, but he was with the team for years before being able to do that. You know, you think about Federer with Severin Luthi, even Davidovich Fokina, his coach Agüero. They've been working together since he was 9 years old. He was crying when, I can't remember which match it was, whether it was when he beat Djokovic or when he won the semi-final. But, you know, there are a bunch of players like that who have that sort of coach that they've had for a very, very long time and there's somebody that they trust. And, yeah, Emma's just never really had that. Yes, okay, when she worked with my brother, she worked with him for a couple of years. She then worked with her next coach, Alistair Filmer, for I think about 2 to 3 years. But that's more because you're sort of based somewhere. You're
okay,
not
yeah.
really, you know, as much as they were coaching her, if she stopped working with them, she'd still be based at the centre. Like, you know, her school was at the centre, like everything. So you're just sort of there. Like, you're going to change coaches far less often because there just aren't many coaches around. And then since she's obviously been professional, she just hasn't had that. So I think searching for a long-term coach is sort of impossible because she doesn't know what she's looking for. She's not had that before. You don't know what works. And hey, look, and even the very, very best, somebody like a Novak Djokovic worked with Marion Vida. When they split the first time, it did not go well. And he had to get back. And it was pretty much as soon as he got back with Vida, he sorted everything out. He had 6 months where Djokovic was all over the place. And then Vida came back in, sorted everything out. And then off they went again, back to utter domination. So, you know, even somebody like a Novak Djokovic, who you think would know what he is doing, can completely go awry when the right people aren't in place. So I think that the pressure on her to find this coach and find this long-term coach is a bit... It's way too much, and it's just misplaced because, as I say, you know, she doesn't know. So yeah, I mean, look, I wasn't surprised, but it'll be interesting to see what sort of tactics she goes with next. Whether she goes with a Svitolina type model, where Svitolina had Thierry Accioni doing the main bulk of the coaching at home, and then Andrew Bettels was delivering it on the road. That would be something different to what she's done. Whether she just work, yeah. She's talking about working with the LTA support team. There's lots of different routes she could go down. So I think we'll start seeing her try and change things, because looking for that one-on-one coach, it's just not working.
Yeah, Riccardo Piatti, the most recently the coach of Jannik Sinner, has been mentioned. I think I remember something. Was it the Mark Petchy said? Because he worked with her for a bit. He said she is the player, and she has her dad Ian as a part of everything as well, that will take bits from people and soak it up, and then move on to the next bit and take the other bit. So it's just, I think, I remember Milos Raonic, CEO of Team Raonic, he would do a similar thing, wouldn't he? He would get people that he wanted to take a certain bit from and then move on to someone. It sounds a lot more brutal than it is. Do you know what I mean, though? But you work with someone because you think, actually, this person can give me this.
Yeah, but in one way, it is brutal because you're sort of hiring and discarding people quite quickly.
Yeah.
But on another level, I've always found that there's actually so much respect that comes from her and her dad and her family towards everyone, even people who haven't achieved anything. They really feel like everyone has something that she can learn, that they can learn.
Yeah.
And they want to know what that is. They want to find it. And so they have a real respect for, as I say, everyone, and for coaches that ordinarily people would just sort of dismiss as like, oh, they're no good. They don't have the right credentials. They are so fascinated. So it does work both ways. If you just look at the sort of hiring and firing, it looks really brutal. But I personally think that in their interactions with coaches, they are really respectful in a way, because everybody's got something. They're always looking around, like, what can we learn? Even if it's just one thing, they'll take it. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of a different approach, I guess. People just aren't used to it. But also people don't realise that in Britain, the culture of having long-term coaches, especially from childhood, as Sonogo has, as David Rakina has, as plenty of them, it doesn't happen.
No.
It doesn't happen here. It's not encouraged. It's a cultural thing within British tennis. It's very much sort of you have a coach for a time, and that is how we work here. And I think that's quite unusual, to be honest. I think it was maybe similar in the States, but they've just sort of exaggerated that part of it. But really, that's how everybody works here.
And I think that's an interesting point for people to note. Now, during that, you mentioned chicken and egg, which reminded me. Do you remember I was talking about the Easter Bunny finding us on our tropical holiday?
Oh,
so
can you make it?
The Tooth Fairy wasn't needed, wonderfully. I think he'll be needed soon. The Easter Bunny made it, but as I was hiding eggs as the Easter Bunny, I hid loads in our sort of apartment. We had a ground floor garden let out, wonderful. I thought I'd hide some in the garden. You know, they could really go searching the garden. So I did that the night before. It's quite a hot country, but I thought it'd be cool enough in the morning. The next day, I got up early. I went out. You'll be pleased to know, I went out for a run. Try and burn off some of the excessive amounts of food and drink I was consuming. And they'd been eaten. Something had eaten the eggs in the garden. It freaked me out a little bit. So in some cases, the wrappers were still there. But in other cases, the whole eggs had gone.
And you're sure it wasn't your children?
No, they were knocked out by sun and swimming. They were far, because when I got back, no, it's when I left in the morning when everyone was asleep. So this was really early in the morning. It kind of scared me a little bit. Something had come out of the foliage and taken the Easter eggs. Something had eaten them. Don't know what.
Ooh.
The only things I'd seen are really big snails and like little geckos, little lizards. But something had, so that freaked me out a little bit. And I had to admit that, because there was just wrappers and bits of chocolate lying around. Oh. Yeah, so, but I left plenty inside. So, yeah, Easter Bunny found them. Tooth Fairy wasn't needed. Sorry, I just remember that from our life.
No, very important.
It's very important. Very important. And slightly scary when those eggs were taken away. Now, something that just I feel that maybe it was talked about, and that's when I was on a plane. Maybe it was usurped by another piece of news. Maybe it's not big news. Is that Patrick Mouratoglou is now the full-time coach of Simona Halep.
It's just not big news.
That's big news. That feels to me like Serena Williams, long-term full-time coach, is now full-time coach of Simona Halep. Because that starts you thinking about Serena Williams, as we've talked about recently, post-tennis, leaving tennis. Will she come back to tennis? And then Simona Halep, I mean, that shows her intentions, doesn't it? Getting Patrick Mouratoglou full time.
Yeah, no, good news for Halep for sure. I think it's a fascinating mix of personalities, that one. It's not one I would have picked, but we'll see. I don't know. We'll see how that ends up. But yeah, I don't know with Serena. She's been away for so long. You can't blame her coach for being like, look, can I work with someone else? Where are you? What are you doing? You know, I think it's sort of fair enough. So, yeah, I don't think that means anything for Serena. I think it's still the same situation. But, yeah, good news for Halep, although I am intrigued to see the dynamic.
What, when she starts yelling at the box? I think Patrick Mouratoglou just smile. because she admits, she does get a little bit angry at the box. Someone I'm just going to talk about every week while she's still doing what she's doing, although she has pulled out of Madrid to rest herself for the defence of Rome, then going to Roland Garros, is Iga Świątek. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, fourth consecutive title, 23 matches in a row, Doha, Indian Wells, Miami, Stuttgart, 7 career titles, and she's only 20 years of age. I mean, I read a stat somewhere that she's won 30 matches this year, and she won 36 in the whole of 2021.
It's just ludicrous.
It's like,
what a run. What a run that she's on. I mean, obviously given a big boost as well by becoming number one.
Yeah.
Surely she's going to win the French or Wimbledon.
Or surely. Both. Surely. Everything.
She's got to get one of them, isn't she?
Everything. Wimbledon. Wimbledon's always the tricky one, isn't it? I would say Roland. Surely she's got to be a hot favourite for Roland Garros. Surely.
Yeah, hot favourite. Yeah, for sure. But I think Wimbledon, she's going to be the favourite everywhere now. I mean, Wimbledon, she won juniors there, so she can play on grass. She just hasn't played on it much as a professional because of COVID.
Yeah. So, okay, if I asked you now who's going to win Wimbledon, would you say Świątek?
I would say Świątek, yeah, for Wimbledon. I'm less convinced for Roland Garros.
Are you?
Yeah, well, just because it seems silly to say Świątek for both, so I might as well say something different.
So you're going...
That's my logic.
So you're not going for the one that she's won? You're going for the one that she won as a junior, but not as... Oh, see, that's interesting. I think I remember that, didn't I, ages ago, when we were being told off by a couple of our listeners for not talking or praising about Nadal as much as we should have been, although we were saying lovely things about him, that I think I said then and there that he's going to win Roland Garros. And I know he's had injuries since, but he's announced he's back in Madrid, which is good news. And I'm going to stick with Nadal to win Roland Garros. Although that might not seem like a leap. I haven't wobbled from that at all, even despite recent injuries. And despite Tsitsipas...
Not tempted.
Tsitsipas, you know, defending his Monte Carlo title. Were you about to say not tempted by Tsitsipas?
Yes. I think that Nadal and Tsitsipas probably going in on an equal footing in terms of favouritism for the event.
Ooh, wow, okay.
Do you know what was hilarious? I had a look at the bookies' odds and get this one. I mean, most of them are sort of fair enough. I don't bet, but we were just having a conversation the other day as to who the favourites were.
Yeah.
And Dominic Thiem, fourth favourite, which I thought was absolutely ludicrous. As much as we love Thiem, of course, and we're excited that he's back. I mean, come on. He hasn't played in a year.
I mean,
he's not going to win it. Fourth favourite. I think.
Wow.
I think it did go.
Who? Okay.
Nadal, Tsitsipas,
Djokovic?
Possibly Alcaraz, Thiem.
Hang on.
Djokovic.
Whoa. Was Thiem ahead of Djokovic?
No, he can't have been ahead of Djokovic. Anyway, it was just stupid. It was absolutely stupid. So, I know. I mean, it's great to have Dominic back. Maybe next year.
Yeah, look, he's talked about, hasn't it? Because it's so wrist-heavy, his style of tennis. And he's talked about it. He said, look, finally, I can start to work on it. But it's taken this long for me to be able to put in the work I need to do with my shot-making for my style of play for the wrist injury I had. And he's always been a kind of... I always think of Wawrinka like a diesel engine. You know, they take a little bit of time to get going. And when they get going, they're absolutely phenomenal. But Thiem, as you say, it's really nice to see him back. It's really nice to see he's pain-free. But I think also he's, you know, mentally and physically, he's got to get himself back there. Because he's been out. He's a sensitive soul. He's been through an awful lot. He's a Grand Slam champion. But it's going to take... And we know that really his driving force now is winning Roland Garros. I think everyone crowned him... Nadal's heir apparent, because we thought, yes, Dominic Thiem, it's all going to happen on clay. Then it started to all happen on the hard courts, and then he gets injured, and then he's away from the game. And we know that his motivation now is to win Roland Garros, but yeah, no, he can't. Wow, he can't be anywhere in the betting for Roland Garros. Surely, I know. I mean, that's...
It's just because he's been in the final.
Nice.
Anyway, I know that we are out of time, but next week I do want to have a quick chat about the Pam Shriver story that was out about her and her coach recently. We just couldn't squeeze everything into this pod, so we will touch on that next week.
Yes, no, absolutely. And there will be more. Probably Emma Raducanu will have a coach confirmed and other decisions will be made elsewhere. And there is so much going on, but you have moved house. I am back from holiday, so yes, onwards with the pods.
Busy season coming up.
But lovely as ever to chat. And yeah, we'll be back next week.
Yeah, see you then.
Bye.